The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey. Artest is in the stands.
But if y'all waiting on me to apologize, hell gonna freeze.
Wait.
Welcome everybody to the Points in the Paint Podcast, Stadium's number one NBA podcast. I'm Ben Wittenstein.
Is Zach Badger House. Now you know you said Stadium's number one NBA podcast or Stadium's number one and only NBA podcast.
Listen, sometimes you have to milk the advertisement a little bit. You gotta say we're the number one podcast. We may be the only NBA podcast from Stadium, but Zach, we are also the number one NBA podcast.
By default, we are definitely number one.
You can find us anywhere you find podcasts. Give us a rating, leave a comment, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. We've gotten great feedback on Twitter and everything like that, so it's fun interacting. And what did we just get, Zach? We got a new social media page. We're coming into the 21st century, finally.
I wouldn't say it like that, but, you know, listeners, you know, subscribers, points painters, you got to listen up, listen carefully. If you want to have an opportunity to chime in and be a part of the Points in the Paint podcast, now more than ever, we know you've probably subscribed, you've reviewed, you've rated us, you've left comments, but now you have an opportunity to do something even further. We have created our very own Points in the Paint podcast Facebook page, and now you'll be able to chime in and get tips on betting and be able to give us your hottest NBA takes throughout the course of the NBA season. It's official. It's up to date. It's fairly simple. Points in the Paint podcast. Just type that out on your Facebook, and you'll be able to locate us and click that page to follow us, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I'm guessing you're going to be the one who's going to be running that mostly if you're going to be posting betting tips, because I think every time I give betting tips, it just loses. So I think at this point, it's just bad luck for me to give anyone betting tips. Keep it to myself, and they'll win. But if I give them out, they're going to lose. That's just how it works.
Hey, I don't win too often as well. So you can fade me sometimes. You can even fade Ben. So whatever works for you, it's all right.
You know, we'll just post our picks, and every one of our picks, you just fade them. I think that's going to be the rule for the Facebook page, is fade all of the picks we give on the page. So it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to stuff we post on Facebook, you know, the new up-and-coming social media site. So hopefully people can get on there and follow our page, and we'll see where that goes. But, Zach, let's get into some stuff with the story of the week.
Our top story tonight.
And the story of the week this week is the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, man.
Who else but the Brooklyn Nets? Because, Zach, they're killing it. They're playing really, really well. They've won six in a row. They went on a West Coast trip. They're 5-0 on that West Coast trip. They're 4-0 without Kevin Durant, who's been out. I don't know what else to say about the Nets. I think, you know, I was going to ask, should we take the Nets more seriously? But I really think they just answered that question for us. They are a serious contender now, and they've shown that.
Yeah, you know, it always takes, you know, some room to grow, chemistry to build, you know, that sort of thing. But to point out the Brooklyn Nets, you know, current winning streak right now with six games, four of those games have been out the prolific score, you know, number seven, you know, free seven, Kevin Durant. He's played exceptionally well. But up until, you know, they go out west on that West Coast trip, they go out there without him. They go out and beat the Clippers. They go out and beat the Lakers. Two teams at the top of the West. And they go out there and take care of business, along with beating the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns without their prolific starter, Brooklyn Nets, Kevin Durant. And you love to see it if you're a Brooklyn Nets fan.
And listen, we can talk about that Kawhi Leonard play from Sunday night in the push-off on James Harden, which...
That was bad. No, that was bad. That's a flop. That's a flop. I'm glad you said that. That's a flop.
You know, it's a bit of a flop, and I know we're not the number one James Harden fan podcast over here. We love to make fun of him, but listen, the man loves to flop. He loves to sell everything that he does in terms of fouls. He loves to sell it when he's trying to get a foul on offense, and he loves to sell it on defense, too, and he sold it really well. Should that have been a foul? No, I don't think that should have been a foul. It should have been a no call. It should have been a no call. That late in the game, you got to swallow your whistle. You don't have to blow your whistle every single time. There's contact on a drive, but they blew the whistle. Kawhi got called for the charge, and that was that. That was all she wrote, and the Nets won that game against the Clippers, who, again, they were down. They were down double digits, and they came back. They worked their way back. They had a chance to tie it up, and they just didn't do it, and the Nets came away with the win. So I'm really interested to see, Zach, if they are able to continue this when KD comes back. Is this the same team when he comes back? Is it a better team when he comes back? Because there's a possibility that you start throwing him in the mix when the team's doing well and everything goes awry.
I want to touch base a little bit on that call with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard. So with James and Kawhi goes to the basket. It's a little shove with James Harden, but there's also a little shove with Kawhi, too, as he gets to the rim. It should have been a no call, but it was an offensive foul on Kawhi Leonard. Now, this is what my immediate thought process was, being the moment that play happened. This is what I thought. You tell me what you think of this rule. The last 2 minutes of an NBA game, the last 2 minutes. If the game is within 5 points in the last 2 minutes of an NBA game, should be no fouls. No fouls called. Absolutely none. The last 2 minutes of a game with it, when it's within 5 points or fewer, there should be just straight up and down basketball. The last 2 minutes of the game, no fouls, no nothing. I want to see who wins this game, who has the more competitive edge, who has the eager and the urge to really go out there and win a game down the stretch within 5 points with 2 minutes left. Who wants to win? No refs involved, no whistles. Just I want to see who wins the game. What do you think of that?
Wait, so are you saying it should be a rule that there should be no whistles in the last 2 minutes?
The last 2 minutes.
The referees walk off the court.
I don't even know if they should walk off the court, but unless someone travels or double dribbles or carry or there's a 3 seconds, you know, those type of rules, cool. But no foul should be called the last 2 minutes within 5 points of an NBA game. I don't care what anyone says. It better be a drastic foul. But the foul call we just saw with offensive foul with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, that's absurd within the last 2 minutes of an NBA game within 5 points. I didn't like it.
I agree. That's a hot take. I think that's a really hot take. No fouls in the last 2 minutes if it's within five. And I love it because I think that should be kind of the way that the officials go about it. Now, zero calls, probably not. Should they call, like, calls where they think maybe, you know, it could go either way? Yeah, swallow the whistle. You don't have to become part of the story at that point. And I never understood referees and officials who really just want to blow their whistle with any contact late in the game. You know, just let them play. Let it go out. Unless it's really egregious, let it go. You know, these guys, they can handle a little bumping. They could handle a little physical contact down low. You don't need to call a foul for every little touch that happens down low, especially in the last 2 minutes. Because, Zach, what we've seen, too, is we've seen reviews take over games, and we've seen whistles take over games, and then the last 2 minutes become the last 20 minutes of a basketball game, and it's impossible to watch.
We got a buzzer beater from Terry Rozier over the weekend because Draymond Green was upset about a call and received his second technical foul, which put the Golden State Warriors in a situation where they lost on a buzzer beater play because Draymond Green didn't agree with the refs. Now, granted, when you're a guy like Dede, Draymond Green, and you have a history of being into it with the referees, that's something you just can't do down the stretch of that game to put your team in that situation. So there are some instances where the refs can and cannot, you know, get involved in the game to put a team at an advantage or disadvantage. But at the same time, I will give that credit to Rozier that he was knocking down shots throughout that little stretch of that game anyway. So those refs didn't really, I wouldn't necessarily blame the refs for that game with that technical foul between the Warriors and the Hornets. But that, like I said, there's something that has to be done with the last 2 minutes with the refs and calling fouls, because they keep it too tight and they blow calls sometimes. Like, they're 100%. Not perfect.
Yeah, 100% agree. Because two, the other thing is when they make a call like that, when they make a charge call or they make a foul call that, you know, you could have swallowed your whistle for and no one really would have been upset, but they make a foul call and then suddenly they have to take a look at it. They have to, if someone challenges it, a coach challenges it, or they think they maybe got it wrong. You avoid all of that stoppage time if you just swallow your whistle. You just let it go. You let them play. You let the game's movement continue. I mean, you let the flow go. And I think that's what more NBA officials need to do. And we've seen NBA officials in the past really try to take over a game with their whistle and think they're trying to control it more than they really are. And it just sucks to watch. It's just annoying, and it makes the end of games that could be extremely fun with teams going back and forth, it just kills the whole flow.
Yeah, and like you said, like Kawhi Leonard with the offensive foul, he even made the layup. So you can, so he made the layup. Now we got another timeout. Brooklyn Nets go to the huddle, and we see what happens next. Like, or we go to OT or whatever the scenario may be. But having the whole game, they've played so well up and down, you know. They're fighting, clawing back and forth. It's a knockout fight. You know, they're trying to win a game. You know, the Clippers are, they're trying to beat this team without Kevin Durant. And the Brooklyn Nets are trying to win another game without Kevin Durant. So you have that whole situation. You have that whole scenario. And so when that does take place, when that does transpire, you got to look at yourself as a referee and say, okay, these guys are superstars. We just need to have a level playing field and just let these guys play ball until the whistle blows, until the whistle's over.
100%. Absolutely. And if we want to focus on the Nets for a second, Zach, the one thing I did want to mention about them was surprisingly to me, and I think it's a surprise to a lot of different people who expected the Nets to be bad on defense, plainly, just to be a bad defensive team. They have surprisingly gotten a little better defensively. And we saw them have games when they started with their big three that we have now, where they were giving up, you know, 120, 125,
40, little, no, sometimes 100, hold on. Yeah. 140, about 150.
Listen, I was trying to be a little bit nicer to them, but yes, their defense was non-existent. Now they give up 108 to the Clippers. They gave up 98 to the Lakers, 94 to the Pacers, 117 to the Warriors. They're starting to keep teams under 120 points, which to them is a huge improvement than where they started.
Remember when I said it. I said it, and I want you to remember that I said it. What did I say, Ben? I said with the Brooklyn Nets, I needed one thing. I was never going to take them serious as true title contenders unless the Brooklyn Nets were to hold a team under 100 points. So not 120. I was a little harder. I was a little harder on them. You have to be able to hold a team in the NBA, not on a consistent basis, but at least night in, night out, sometimes be able to hold a team defensively under 100 points. And they begin to do that with the team you mentioned, the Indiana Pacers. When I saw that game and they were able to do that and actually win that game comfortably too, on top of the Indiana Pacers being held under 100 points, that's when I said, okay, now they got something going. They got a groove going. And like you said, they held the Lakers under 100 points. So just keeping teams under 100 points defensively and having that offensive juggernaut they have with Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant, the Brooklyn Nets can be unstoppable if they lock in defensively. And the most important player on the team, despite those big three that I mentioned, is DeAndre Jordan. I don't care what anyone says. He's the most important piece on that team because of defense.
So how are you feeling about the Nets right now? Are you on a scale of Kyrie to Steve Nash? Are you feeling like, if you're feeling more Kyrie, it's more of a conspiracy at this point. The Nets really aren't contenders. It looks more than they actually are at this point. Or are you more on the Steve Nash side of things where, you know, you're believing in him. You're thinking that this is a team that can really make a push for a finals berth come the summer.
Well, come the summer, you know, honestly, I would have to be on the Steve Nash approach as opposed to the conspiracy with Kyrie. But I only say that because they got an alpha dog. You know, okay. Kyrie and James Harden, for me, are the beta man in this situation with the big three. And KD has to be the alpha dog. So as long as KD can come out and be the alpha dog, and you got a guy like James Harden who's literally kind of sacrificing his scoring, which we all know he's been a prolific scorer in this league, that led the league in scoring, you know, and been a top league scorer in this league over the course of the last 5 years. So for James Harden to sacrifice his scoring to up his playmaking ability for the rest of the guys, and then Kyrie only has to worry about putting the ball in the basket and getting defensive stops, man, that's a team brewing to reach the Eastern Conference Finals and also make the NBA championship as well.
Yeah, and we could talk about also how bad the East really is right now. They only have four teams that are above 500. So the East is wide open for the Nets to be able to do anything they really want in there, and the really only competition in the East is, you know, the Bucks or the 76ers.
And the 76ers for me, Ben, is the true team that can really give the Brooklyn Nets a run for their money. And when I say that, it's all because of my main man's Joel Embiid. All right, now MVP candidate. And we talked about Joel last week. And then he goes out last week. Within that same week, we dropped the podcast. Joel goes out and gets the 50 ball, which we'll get to later on in the pod. And so he's playing at an elite level. You just need Ben Simmons to continue to play at a good level. Not elite level, but at a decent good level offensively. Just apply pressure offensively if you're not going to score the basketball in terms of shooting. Just apply pressure with attacking the rim and getting other shooters involved, like the Seth Currys, the Danny Greens, the Tyrese Maxeys. If they just continue to buy in defensively, the Philadelphia 76ers, those two teams could end up meeting in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Ah, that would be so fun. And we come out last week saying Embiid is our top MVP candidate. He goes ahead then and scores 50 points. I don't know any better proof out there that shows Joel Embiid listens to the Points in the Paint podcast.
Hey, I think you're absolutely right. You know, Joel had to tune in to the Points in the Paint. He heard us talking that good vibes, especially me. I had to call him out too last week, because last year he said he's rooting for that number one seed in the East, an MVP. And you know who got those in his same conference? Giannis. He got MVP and number one seed. And so now you have this year, you got Joel Embiid with a new coach, new direction. They're a number one seed in the East. And he's playing top-notch basketball, averaging 30 with a double-double, coming off the 50.
You're taking the Shaq approach here, where you're taking responsibility for Embiid's good play because of how you criticized him in the past, and he heard it, and he wanted to get better. So you're the Shaq here?
You got to criticize. Hey, I tell you what, I felt the same way with Rudy Gobert when he scored that 2020 game last month, too. Because I was calling Rudy Gobert out to be better, do better for that $200 million he received. And he goes out and get a 2020 game. And then what do you know? The Utah Jazz are the number one seed. So I'll gladly take credit for Rudy Gobert's performance and his play and Joel Embiid's 30 points a game, double-double, number one seed in the East. I'll take that credit for sure without a problem, Ben.
Zach Badgerhouse is the miracle worker in the NBA. All right, Zach, let's try to make some money here. Betting corner time. Let's take a look. Best team against the spread continues to be for the third, fourth week in a row. Yeah, Utah Jazz, 22-8 against the spread. And they're dominating. That's the only word, is they are dominating. They are just winning and winning and winning.
It's so crazy because it's like, you got to be stubborn at this point to not listen to the Points in the Paint podcast and not follow the Utah Jazz, because listen,
get on the train. It's going to the moon.
If you're a better, you better listen carefully. Good teams win. Great teams cover. And check this out. Ain't no other team in the NBA that are covering like the Utah Jazz. The Utah Jazz are playing exceptionally well, shooting the ball, spraying the ball, sharing the sugar. Donovan Mitchell. I don't know how Donovan Mitchell isn't an MVP candidate, maybe because they're playing collectively as a team. And so that's not necessarily really a guy who necessarily stands out. for the Utah Jazz, I mean, like you said, you got Jordan Clarkson, we've mentioned before on this podcast, coming off the bench, shooting career numbers from the three, knocking the three ball down. They just had a great month in January where they shot career numbers and shot and made the most threes they've ever made in franchise history, the Utah Jazz. So bet your money, put your money where your mouth is with the Utah Jazz, currently 22-8 against the spread.
Yeah, it would be first of all really ridiculous to bet against the Jazz.
And I did it myself because I thought, okay, they gotta run out of momentum eventually. They're still hot.
Yeah, no, they're still going. And then if we're talking about a hot team, we just talked about them, Brooklyn Nets, 6 against the spread wins in a row for the Nets. They're coming out hot. They're starting to be one of the bettors' favorite type of teams. And honestly, Zach, they have been extremely undervalued in the market recently. They have won a couple of games where they have just been the straight underdog.
Yeah, I saw one of those games. I believe they were underdogs to either the Sacramento Kings or the Phoenix Suns. One or the other. One of those games during their road trip. And I said, hold on. And I think it was like a plus 2.5. It was something small. It wasn't nothing too crazy. But when I saw it, I said, hold on, wait a second. I know they don't have Kevin Durant, but I still think they can possibly win this game with James Harden running the show. And what did they do? They not only come back from being down like 20 points against the Phoenix Suns, but they go out and win the game. And James Harden has like one of the best games he's had as a Brooklyn Net.
It's why they were, 6.5-point underdog. Like, it's how are they 6.5-point underdogs in that game? Now, they play the Kings on Tuesday, the day this podcast comes out. I think they're going to be 6 or 7-point favorites. Now, the interesting thing about the Nets, too, is when they're favorites against the spread, they are suboptimal, 8-14 against the spread when they are the underdogs. When they are the favorites. So maybe I don't think the market is going to continue to undervalue them as much now that we've seen that they can beat a team when they're 6-7-point underdogs, and they can beat teams without Kevin Durant when they only have Harden and Kyrie. But man, they've been hot. 6 against the spread wins in a row. They've got a pretty favorable schedule coming up as well. So they're going to be favored for the next few games too.
This other team though, man, they're colder.
Garbage.
They're colder than ice. Trae Young shooting the ball from the logo.
Okay. Yeah, they're bad.
They are bad. And they're 12, what? They lost 12 against the spread in a row? What team is this?
That's Cleveland Cavaliers. Stinky Cleveland Cavaliers. 10-21 against the spread this season. Like you said, 12 against the spread losses in a row. They've been in a free fall. They're gunning for that top pick in next year's draft, Zach, I think is the goal there.
Hey, is Joakim Noah on a roster? Because if he's not, I'm pretty confident he's betting against the Cleveland Cavaliers every night. He's probably making some big money, Joakim Noah.
He seems like someone who would be in the NBA sports gambling. I could definitely see that. Putting $500,000 bets down every night. And betting against the Cavaliers, I think, would be great for him too.
Listen, you know he don't like Cleveland, so he's probably betting against Cleveland every chance he gets, especially against the spread.
Honestly, probably making more money than he did as a player, just fading the Cavaliers all season. The best over team, we've got a new over team, Zach.
We do. Pelicans,
they've been dethroned in favor of the New Orleans Pelicans. They are 22-8 with the over. So they, out of their 30 games, 22 of them have gone over.
I would like to credit that to the lack of defense from the New Orleans Pelicans. Yeah, because if you watch the New Orleans Pelicans, you watch Zion, you watch the rest of that team, granted, you know, lately, they've really missed Steven Adams. He's been out of the lineup lately, so they really miss him, especially in their last outing against the Boston Celtics. Oh, my goodness. When I tell you, Ben, they need some rim protection, it's not even funny. Like, and I don't understand SVG. I like Stan Van Gundy. He's a defensive-oriented coach, defensive-minded. But this is what I don't understand with SVG. How do you play the Herm Gomez dude or whatever? He's hardly even 6'10". But you won't play the unicorn. You know the guy I like, Jackson Hayes. How do you not play him? He's going to protect the rim. He's going to run the floor, get dunks, rebound, block shots. I just feel like Jackson Hayes doesn't get enough minutes, and so the defense won't really be there around the rim. And so, you know, opponents just get layup after layup after layup, and that just leads to the over in between those outings with the Pelicans.
I'm a big Jackson Hayes fan, too, so I agree. I don't know why they haven't been going to him more. And we've seen point guard Zion now. I mean, they've been increasing their points as well because point guard Zion has been working pretty well for them. He's shown that he can be a pretty good ball handler in their offense and the way that they scheme. So they're scoring more and they're giving up more. So that's probably the big reason why they are the best over team in the NBA. Now, the best under team is still the New York Knicks, which is understandable. Tom Thibodeau's teams are usually going to slam those unders consistently because of how good they are on defense. And just, it's not even that how good they are on defense, Zach. The Knicks are god-awful at scoring. And they're a little bit better now because Derrick Rose is on the team, and he's opened up a little bit of avenues for them to score a bit more. But before they had Derrick Rose, oh my God, it was disgusting watching them play offense. It was sad almost. They couldn't do anything.
Yeah, they definitely couldn't do much. It was bad. You got Julius Randle. I mean, they were trying. I give them that. You know, so the New York Knicks, they were trying to get some offense going, but they definitely were more predicated towards the defensive side of the ball. You got Emmanuel Quigley, the rookie, and they're just trying to grow. The New York Knicks, you know, they didn't run. How many games they even won? About four out of the last five, or something like that.
Yeah, so they won four of their last five, and they're scoring in the upper hundreds, in the 110s, 120s for a couple games. I mean, that's huge.
You know, Julius Randle dropped 40 last week. You know, that was dope for him to do that. You know, that was very good to see, to get the confidence level with them. You know, year seven with Julius Randle, and he's becoming among one of the best All Stars in the league, because he definitely will be an All Star. I'm booking it right here on the Points in the Paint podcast. Julius Randle will definitely be selected by the coaches among the league for an All-Star. He will definitely be an All-Star for the New York Knicks. So I got to give kudos to that. And for him, Emmanuel Quigley, they got to get some more minutes and work with Obi Toppin a little more. The veteran leadership, obviously, from Rose coming in. Hey, if you're a New York Knicks fan, you out there in New York, you're probably feeling real good right now. Then you got to cross the bridge to Brooklyn Nets. Might be a good day in New York on a Monday.
Listen, they're improving. That's all you need. You need the Knicks to show some improvement, and they have shown that they're headed in the right direction. And for a Knicks fan, that's all you can ask for. You just want them to be pointed true north. The ship has been righted.
Don't stagnate.
They're getting better. That's all you need. All right, let's go to our interview. We had ESPN 1000's Chris Bleck on to talk everything NBA, and also a little bit of Zach LaVine too. He's got some strong opinions on him. So Zach, let's go to our interview with the ESPN 1000's Chris Bleck. All right, we want to welcome in the guests for this week's pod. He's a host and producer on ESPN 1000 in Chicago, and he also hosts the weekday show Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. It's Chris Bleck. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Ben, Zach, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
Not too much. So there's so many places we can start with the NBA, but a good place to start, I think, would be with the Chicago Bulls. And I know you talked about before we started recording about all the callers that you've talked to about Zach LaVine and having some fun Twitter conversations about him over the weekend, because he is playing really well. This is, you know, some of the best basketball we've seen him play his whole career. So I guess what I want from you is two things. I want to know what your takeaway about his play has been this season, and where do you see his fit with the Bulls going forward in the next couple of years?
Well, right, it's a complicated question, because he is a superbly talented offensive player for the Chicago Bulls, and I don't think anyone will take away that his offensive skill set, his ability to dribble, penetrate, his ability to step back from three, to hit a three-point shot with a guard up in his face from almost any spot before you get to the logo. You know, it's something that we've seen from guards like Lillard, like Stephen Curry, like Trae Young, that Zach LaVine has added that to his game. And then you obviously talk about the explosiveness around the rim. He really is one of the elite offensive talents in all of the NBA. And so, like, the large scale picture with Zach LaVine is, you know, Ben, you mentioned it, he's having a fantastic season, 29.9 points per game, 6 in the NBA coming into tonight. And he's having another nice night tonight, Bulls and Rockets. And I feel like some of what the discourse and conversation about Zach LaVine gets lost in translation, because he's a player who's so superbly talented offensively that people ignore that there are two ends of the floor, when it comes to playing winning basketball. And I think that's the context that I always bring it back to, is that he's been a really nice player for the Bulls, but the Bulls also have never been above 500 with Zach LaVine on the team. Now, hopefully they're trending that way, and hopefully they will get to that point. But unfortunately, he really hasn't been in a lot of big spots where games matter, where the moments matter, where he has to perform, and he hasn't had the opportunity to show us that he's more than a guy who's filling up the stat sheet for a team that's lower in the rankings, lower in the standings. And so, like, that also goes into this whole conversation of what do I think Zach LaVine is for the future of the team, because he's under contract this year, about $19 million, and next year, $19 as well. I think it's $19.5 million. And then he's a free agent. And so you guys know as well as I do, when we get to this point in a contract for an individual, especially someone who is a budding superstar, they're going to want a new deal. And for someone like Zach LaVine, who's sixth in the league in scoring, and he's improving, his shooting percentages are so much better than what they were a couple of years ago, he's going to want max money. I mean, that's what's coming down the pipeline from a year and a half from now when he becomes a free agent. So the Bulls have a short amount of time to figure out, A, is he worthy of max money? B, what can they put around him to make this team a contending winning team or a playoff team? And then C, the third part of this is that you have to kind of look at this and say, okay, if he is our player who's going to get max money, how do we put more around him to get to that next level? How far off are we really? And if not, is he the type of player that maybe isn't worth paying that money right now? And he's someone that you could use to then manipulate and to trade and to get more assets back because he is on a bargain deal. So, like, to me, it's full context because he's not very good defensively. And I think what a lot of people forget, and I know I'm kind of rambling on here, is a lot of people don't realize that the Bulls are really bad defensively. And a part of that is because of their backcourt, which is Kobe White and Zach LaVine. And they're eating a lot of the minutes in the backcourt. And you see the plus minus numbers improve so much more when Billy Donovan goes to his bench, goes to the vets. And so you have to kind of ask yourself, how does Zach fit if you can get some other vets in here, some younger guys who can assist him in winning, how that would look? Because I think that's what the full context kind of points to.
Yeah, and when you bring up the max contract stuff with Zach LaVine, I mean, when I think about that, I think I'm really on the fence in terms of if the Bulls should give him the max contract. I'm leaning more towards probably a smart idea not to do that. And it seems like with the way you've talked to people about this and expressed your viewpoints on Twitter, you're not really going to try to convince me otherwise that it would be smart to give him that max.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I feel like it's complicated, right?
But is it really, though?
So are you arguing that it's not because he's not worthy of a max deal?
Well, for me, this is Zach. So for me,
yeah.
I feel like if you don't give Zach LaVine the max in Chicago, you're basically saying you want to start over. So if you're starting over, who are we looking forward to go and get? And if so, who's going to be out there in the free agency willingly going to come to Chicago as of late?
Yeah, no, and Zach, that's a great point. And that's why I feel like they're in a tough situation, right? Like, so let's play this out. Say Zach plays this way and they don't make the playoffs. Would you guys look negatively at all on Zach for the fact that he had such an incredible year, but he couldn't even get his team to the playoffs?
Not at all. I wouldn't.
Okay. And so
yeah, I probably wouldn't.
Okay. And then if we roll it forward, say they're not a playoff team again next year. And I know that's kind of jumping to a conclusion. Like, that's when you have to start to question whether or not he's worthy of max money. I think he's going to get max money, and I think the Bulls are going to pay him max money. So I don't think that that's going to be in the deck of cards. I think what we're going to have to figure out is who could fit alongside Zach LaVine to kind of propel this to the next level, because I think some of the players who are on the team currently, I don't think that's it, you know?
Yeah. To me, Zach seems like the quintessential number two guy. That's like his perfect role. He's the guy who relying to constantly score the basketball, because he can really score whenever he wants. But yeah, he to me is not, he's not the number one guy, because with the number one guy, you want to have some defense. You want to have that passing ability. And Zach's been getting better at passing, but you want the guy who's more balanced all around to be your number one max money superstar kind of guy. And I just, as well as he's been playing this year, I just don't see that in him yet.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. And I think like that's where you have to see a situation where he needs someone who's alongside him, who's going to give you that defensive side, but also who's been a winning player. Like, unfortunately, and I know it's not him by himself, but he's never won. Like, guys, if you look at it, he's never been on a winning
Timberwolves
team.
Yep. Timberwolves. You know,
he's played seven seasons now, and he's never been on a team that was successful. And I think some of that comes into play when we're talking about playoff basketball, talking about, you know, taking advantage of crunch time situations and really maximizing what they have in the collection of talent that they have. You know, so like I think that's where some of the conversation gets lost, because like a lot of this, and Ben, you mentioned like the conversation on Twitter, like there are people who are like out there stumping against people saying he's not an all-star. Who's saying Zach LaVine's not an all-star?
That's ridiculous.
So I don't understand the people taking victory laps the last couple of days saying, see, he's an all-star. It's like, first of all, they haven't announced the teams. And second of all, who is suggesting he's not going to make the all-star team this year? That's crazy.
Yeah, you're sixth leading scorer in the NBA. You definitely should be talked about and mentioned among coaches to be an all-star this year.
It's interesting because I wonder if some of this comes from Bulls fans just seeing the team trade away Jimmy Butler and a player where I think a lot of people at the time felt like it was a weird move, maybe an unnecessary move. But maybe there's a little bit of that in the back of their minds where like, well, we have another guy who potentially could be a top 20, top 25 type of player in this league, and the Bulls are just going to get rid of him again. Maybe there's that type of feeling going around.
Yeah, but I mean, like, listen, I host with Adam Abdallah, and last week we talked about this at length. The point of the conversations about possibly trading Zach LaVine had nothing to do with saying that LaVine wasn't good. The whole point would be if the Bulls thought that they were in a spot where, like, say they look at their cards, right, and say AK and Eversley look at it and they say, you know, Kobe White, he ain't it. Lowry Markkanen, he's not it. You know, the only guy we like here is the guy we drafted, Patrick Williams. Like, if that were the case, you know, the Bulls may be farther off from winning than we all kind of think. And at that point, Zach LaVine has extreme value. I mean, don't you think Zach LaVine would look good on the Pelicans alongside Zion Williamson and Ingram? You know, I'm sure the 76ers wouldn't mind having a scoring
ooh,
like that.
That would put them, oh my goodness.
So like I'm the conversation about Zach LaVine being traded, I think, has been taken out of context, because it's not like people are saying he's not good. He's very good. And the only reason you would think about trading him would be if you thought you could get maximized assets back in return. That's the only thing.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more, Chris, about the Eastern Conference. It's as a whole, you know, it got off to a rocky start. And, you know, you got teams who were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They're barely even 500, you know, the Celtics and the Miami Heat. And so, you know, what do you think these teams need to do to turn their season around for the second half of the season?
Yeah, you know, it's weird to me. I was looking at it this morning because I think Miami is a very fascinating situation. Here's what I was asking myself. Are the Miami Heat good, but they had a tough season? Or are they not as good as we thought they were? And they had this crazy run last year in the NBA bubble. And if it was any other end of the season, the Heat would have never made the finals, and they're really not, and they're really not as good as we think they are. And Tyler Hero and Duncan and Robinson are not as good as we thought they were. Or is there a third thing here? Is it that Miami played so deep into the fall, into October, in the NBA Finals, that the 2 months or what, the month and change in between the end of last season and the start of this season just really wasn't enough time for them to kind of regroup and get ready for this season? And then you heap on top of that all the COVID-19 protocols that they had to deal with. I mean, Jimmy Butler missed, what, 9 games? Because of COVID-19 testing and having to go through the protocol.
Contact tracing, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I'm not sure about Miami. I would imagine that the answer is the first one, is that they just got off to a tough start, and they really are much better than their record shows at 13 and 17. But I do have a skeptical eye towards them, because in any other normal season, you guys know, I don't think we would have seen – Miami getting to the finals, but last year was different. It was this bubble year. There was no travel. Everyone was to get, you know, like, it was just a weird, fluky thing. And so, yeah, I definitely have a skeptical eye towards the Miami Heat, but I assume that they'll kind of turn it around. And, like, if we get to the end of the season and Miami is the 7th seed and New York's the 10th seed, that wouldn't surprise me.
Now, what do you think about Boston in their situation? I mean, they just blew a lead, a 24-point lead against the Pelicans. What do you think of Brad Stevens and how he's doing in Boston?
Well, you know, Brad Stevens talked about it after the game, and, like, the key to their success last year was their defensive ability. And I feel like the one thing with the Celtics is it doesn't seem, even though they're what, like, they have the second best defensive output in the Eastern Conference, it doesn't seem like they're playing the same intensity that they did last year on defense. And I mean, I love Jason Tatum and I love Jaylen Brown, but, you know, they really need to get Kemba Walker going. And without Kemba playing well, I don't know if that team can beat the likes of Milwaukee or a team like the 76ers or the Nets when we get to the playoffs. I just think it's kind of like a different beast. It just doesn't – they don't seem to have the same vibes that they had last year.
We've been talking a lot about the Brad Stevens hot seat, and it seems wow, like they should
really? –
we already
yes! – yes! Yes! Like
it's a tradition. Every single year it ends up happening. But it does seem like this year it's growing a little bit more loud in terms of the social media talk and people just talking about his job. Now, he's clearly one of the better coaches in the league, so I don't think Boston is going to fire him. But has that been the sense to you, where you're hearing people more and more start talking a little bit more? Brad Stevens, is he able to do this job with the Celtics? Things like that.
Yeah, no, I've definitely seen it. And, you know, over their last 10 games, they're 4-6. So, like, I feel like every loss that happens, you start to hear more and you start to see more chatter about this online. And, you know, it is a little shocking to look at it and see that the Bulls right now only sit a game and a half behind the Celtics, because, like, I feel like we enter the season.
A big talent gap. Yeah, I think there's a big talent gap between.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And, you know, even heck, the Knicks are a half game back of the Celtics. And I would argue there's a big talent gap there too. I don't think Brad Stevens is the reason why it doesn't work. You know, maybe Danny Ainge has tweaked with that roster
too much,
so much the last couple of years, that he's finally hit a spot where the team is no longer on the ascent and it's more like kind of just stuck in the middle. And they're a good middle of the pack Eastern Conference team. And they're not that team that we thought would be the best team in the conference.
All right, so moving over to the West for a quick second. We have the Jazz, who are in the top of the Western Conference right now. They're looking great. They're actually right now losing to the Charlotte Hornets. But regardless of that, they have looked phenomenal this season. Their three-point shooting's been insanely fun to watch. Are you a believer in the Jazz, or do you still think they're going to come with what they always do in the postseason and kind of fade away?
Well, the defense leads the way for Utah. And I know that a part of, like, sniffing out teams that are going to go on deep runs before people expect, I think a lot of it goes back to the defensive side of it. And so I like what they've done. I was disappointed in what I saw from them on Friday night against the Clippers. I thought that they had an opportunity to kind of make a statement on national TV and kind of prove that, hey, we've been hot, but no matter who the challenger is, we're going to take care of business. And like in the third and fourth quarter, Kawhi and Paul George were like not frazzled at all. And the Clippers were the team that played the better defense. And I thought that they like kind of made a statement that like, listen, you may have the best
record.
Yeah, you may have the best record, but for right now, like none of that matters because when we get to the playoffs, we're going to be the best team. I know we can debate who the actual best team in the West is, but I thought what we've seen to this point from Utah has been very impressive. And I know like the metrics out there that are crazy, not only the defensive side, but the amount of blowouts they've had to this point in the season. Like usually teams who are 24-6 who are blowing out most of their opponents and playing this great defense, and they have a point differential of plus 9.2. Like usually teams like that are like NBA finals destined teams. And so like I am paying attention to them. I'm not 100% locked that they're going to win the Western Conference, but I do think they're a very, very good team.
Was that a charge on Kawhi Sunday night in your opinion?
Oh no.
Thank you. Thank goodness. I'm so
glad. You know why? Because I agree. Who said it? Was it Van Gundy that said it? That James Harden grabbed his arm first.
Yes. There you go.
So there was contact already made. So the official, if you really wanted to break it down, the official should have called a foul on Harden. Kawhi goes to the free throw line, and then it negates the charge call.
And then, okay, what do you think of this idea, Chris? Hear me out. Because Ben was like, I don't know. So let me hear your take on this. What do you think if the last 2 minutes of the game, if it's within 5 points, it should be no fouls called. No fouls. All other rules apply, but no fouls, no whistle. If it's within 5 points under 2 minutes, it should be just straight up and down basketball. What do you think of that idea?
So you're saying it's like the playground, right? Yes. Like when it's close in a good game, don't stop to complain that someone hacked you. Just keep playing, right? Play yes. through.
Yes.
Yeah, I would be cool with that. I don't have a problem with that. I feel like NBA Twitter would have a problem with that. Like, I don't think NBA Twitter would be able to handle the fact that it's like call the fouls on your honor or, you know, unless you're bleeding, it's not an actual foul. Yeah, I think that'd be awesome to watch though.
Okay, the Brooklyn Nets, they've won, six straight and four without KD on their road trip at that. You think this should be the favorites to come out the East, or you think Philly got a true shot?
Ooh, see, that's a fantastic question because I've been on this Philly bandwagon now for 2 years, and Joel Embiid is – like, I think right now, if you ask me to vote for MVP, I'm voting for Joel Embiid. I think Embiid has been the best player in the league. I would put it between him and Damian Lillard at the moment.
We just became best friends.
And to answer your question, I think what it's going to come down to is can Brooklyn play top-level defense for a seven-game series? We know they can score, but can you convince James Harden and Kyrie Irving to play together defensively to take out and eliminate what the 76ers will be able to do? Now, we both know and we all know that Ben Simmons is not going to shoot from deep, but it will be Ben Simmons – and what they can do offensively with him and Tobias Harris, and whether or not the Nets will be able to slow down Embiid. Like, that to me is a fascinating matchup because you got all this star power. You got a team that hasn't been together for more than seven games. You got a team that was created in a laboratory, right? In using number one picks to create this process. And boom, here it is, Embiid, Simmons. This is what the final product is. I would love to watch that series. I still think Philly is going to be the better team. I like their depth. I love Seth Curry off the bench. But the key for the Nets, absolutely, they'll work in the regular season. They'll win six straight. They'll do all this stuff. but they're giving up 117 points per game. They have to stop someone on defense. I'm not sold that you're going to get buy-in from the two guards, Harden and Irving. And so I would lean the 76ers right now.
Ooh, I love it. So, okay, we got to talk a little bit more with the Sixers. Tobias Harris and Doc Rivers, talk a little bit about that, because it seems like Doc Rivers is the only coach that's gotten the maximum potential out of Tobias Harris in his career.
Yeah, no, that's an astute point, because, you know, Tobias really came to a certain level with the Clippers from that short period of time. And remember, that Clippers team was like not supposed to be competing, but then they kind of did. And it was like, oh, is Tobias Harris a number one? And it's like, no, he's not a number one, but he's certainly a serviceable number three on a championship level team. And I love Tobias Harris. I think his game is smooth. I love his pull-up, Jay. I love everything about the way he fits with Embiid. And you guys know, like, Embiid plots out so much space on the offensive end, right? Like, he's out behind the three-point line. He can work down in the block. But Harris just fits into those little pockets. And I think he just is a perfect fit. And Doc Rivers, you know, I talked to Keith Pompey from the Philly Inquirer last week before the Bulls played the 76ers. And I asked him, like, what has been the secret about the 76ers being the number one team in the Eastern Conference at this point in the season? And he was like, flat out, it's Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers has them playing with a mindset where they are every single game, they know exactly what they want to do, and they have confidence that their talent can do what they need to do. And that's why this team is as good as it is. And he credited Doc Rivers to all that. And I think Tobias Harris is fantastic. And, like, that's one of those things where, to go full circle with our whole conversation about Zach LaVine and the Bulls, is, like, when the Bulls are good, like, do you see Zach LaVine being your number one player? Tobias Harris is not the 76ers' number one player, but he's, like, their third. And that's great for them. And, like, that's the situation Zach LaVine needs to be in. He needs to be in a situation where there's two other guys who can get it done as well to help him out.
Absolutely. I could not agree more on that. And right before we let you go, Chris, you mentioned Dame Lillard as your number two MVP candidate.
Yeah.
And this podcast is objective. Yeah, it's objectively been a pro-Dame podcast since we began over a year ago. So we're more than happy to give a second for you to explain why you think Dame is the number two MVP candidate right now.
Okay, so here's how I break it down in my head. I think I've got three guys at the moment. It's Stephen Curry, Damian Lillard, and Joel Embiid. A lot of people would hear that and say, why Embiid and not Jokic? And I'd say, well, right now the Nuggets are the seventh seed in the West. So unfortunately, the way the MVP works, you don't win MVPs by being on teams who are the seventh in a conference, right?
Yep. Sadly.
So I toss Jokic out of the conversation. I think Embiid is number one because they're the best team in the East. And I think the stats would then also agree, and what Embiid's doing is incredible. I place Damian Lillard ahead of Stephen Curry because of where they are in the standings. I also think Damian Lillard has done more with less this season because the Trailblazers have had more injury issues and more issues throughout this season. And we know McCollum's out and Nurkic has missed time. And so I think Damian Lillard is my number two because they're the fifth seed. I would put Stephen Curry three. His statistical numbers are incredible, but his team is eighth in the West. So the same logic I have for Embiid over Jokic, I would use for Damian Lillard over Stephen Curry. And the one thing that I would also point out, Kevin Durant's numbers are the best he's had in his career. I don't know if he's going to play enough games to be in the MVP conversation, but what Kevin Durant is doing coming back from the Achilles, I think is incredible. So I would have Durant on the outside looking in if he could play enough games. I don't think he's going to because they're going to limit the amount of games he plays in the rehab situation that they're doing there. But that's kind of what I'm looking at. And I know you guys are probably like, Fleck, you forgot about LeBron James. And my response would be is, yeah, no, I know it's his 18th season. I get you. I got you guys.
What else? You got to give me more than that, though.
No. Because look at the stats. He does not compare to the others when it comes to the stats. So, like, if you just want to give him a lifetime achievement award, by all means. But I think what's crazy is, like, you guys know how it works. The hot take shows on TV, you know, First Take and the one with Nick Wright on Fox Sports, and like, they just throw up on the TV the graphic, is LeBron the MVP? But no one actually digs into the numbers to see that, like, yeah, no, he's actually not. When you look at who's the top scorers in the league, like, there are guys having better seasons than LeBron. I'm not trying to hate on LeBron, but like, no.
That's unfortunate.
He's had his MVP moments, right? Like, what was he? He's 12th in scoring right now. Like, come on. I mean, I also feel like that's the same attitude and mindset with Giannis this year, is people are sick of Giannis as an MVP. So, like, I don't think people are going to vote for Giannis Antetokounmpo this year because he's won two in a row, and there's only three guys who have ever won it three times in a row, and that's what? It's Wilt, it's Kareem, and it's Larry Bird. So I doubt that Giannis is going to be in that conversation again this year.
Okay, I'm just glad. Go ahead.
I'm just glad this turned into a Dame Lillard safe space, to be honest.
My thing with Damian Lillard is this. One, I think it is so cool that, A, he's open about wanting to stay in Portland and making Portland a winning team. I think that's great. In the day and age where everyone jumps teams and jumps to go play with other guys, Dame wants to do it in Portland, and I respect that. Number two, he was a guy that went to a small school, but he believed in his own talents, and I think that is cool. And I just love watching Damian Lillard play.
Yeah, his story is pretty awesome. All right, yeah, Chris, so you've got a daily radio show, you've got a podcast, you're on Twitter. Where can people find you and interact with you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Chris Black. You can listen to our radio show every night on ESPN 1000 from 6 to 8 p.m. It's Black and Abdallah each and every weeknight on ESPN 1000. And you can download the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. Just search for the Black and Abdallah tile, and all the podcasts are right there.
Perfect. Chris Black, ESPN 1000. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
All right. Want to thank Chris for joining us. Always fun to talk to him. We love talking to people who just love talking NBA basketball, honestly. Just can talk about whatever they want in the NBA.
And he's one of those guys who's directly right in with the NBA, covering the Chicago Bulls right here in Chicago. So we want to thank Chris Black, you know, host and producer at ESPN 1000 here in Chicago, for jumping on the podcast with us. We definitely appreciate it.
All right, let's go online, Zach. What NBA Twitter is talking about this week?
What it do, baby?
Yeah. They're talking about a lot of stuff. So let's start with All-Star selections, which happened last week. We know who's going to be the NBA All-Star Game starters. Now we know that there's officially going to be a game. There's not going to be any fans. Adam Silver said he doesn't want any parties. The Atlanta mayor said she doesn't want any All-Star parties. Which, if you don't want those parties, don't have the game. But again, I digress there. We know the starters on the West. It'll be Luka, Steph Curry, LeBron, Jokic, Kawhi Leonard. The East, it'll be Kyrie, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Giannis, and Joel Embiid. Not really too many surprises.
Not too many surprises. However, I'm going to chime in with Luka Doncic and what he had to say in regards to the West and the starters in the West for All-Stars. Now, what did Luka say? I'm pretty sure you heard what Luka said. Luka said he doesn't deserve to be a starter. Do I agree with Luka? Absolutely agree with Luka. Luka Doncic probably shouldn't be a starter in the NBA All-Star game. You know who should be a starter? Do you really know who should be? Points in the painters. Do you know who should be the starter for the point guard position in the NBA All-Star game in the Western Conference? His name, Damian Lillard.
Ooh, see, I was gonna go the Donovan Mitchell route.
Ooh, Donnie. Now, I wouldn't be mad at that for Donnie.
See, I don't know how you don't have the top team in the West represented as a starter. That's insane to me.
That is insane when I think about it.
You gotta. I would love for Dame to be a starter, but listen, Donovan Mitchell, he's leading the top team in the Western Conference. He's leading the best team in the NBA.
That's true. That's true. And I can't even deny that. That's so true. And when, you know what? I feel like someone on TV did mention that. I think Charles Barkley may have mentioned that too. Like, where are the Utah Jazz players being represented for the starters? Now, I'm not giving it to Rudy Gobert. I'm sorry. I'm taking Jokic all day, every day, yesterday over Rudy Gobert. So, you know, if you want to do a coin flip, I honestly would say, this is my personal opinion, Ben. I honestly would say Steph Curry and Luka both should come off the bench. And Luka and Damian Lillard and Donnie Mitchell for sure should both be starting. I think Donovan Mitchell and Damian Lillard should both start over Luka Doncic and Steph Curry. Why not? They both have done an exceptional job for their teams, having them right there in the playoff mix. I mean, right there in the playoff mix. You know, the Denver Nuggets, they started off rough, but the Utah Jazz, we've been talking about them for about 4 weeks straight about not only winning games, but also covering the spread, right? You know, good teams win, great teams cover. And that's what they've done time and time again, the Utah Jazz. So you have to reward them. Now, how many All-Stars will the Utah Jazz end up getting on the All-Star team? How many do you think, Ben, in all honesty? How many do you think?
I mean, I would say at least two. At least Gobert and at least Mitchell.
You think so? When you think about it, you really think both? Now, you got to only really... You really think both of them would honestly get an All-Star vote, like to get in, both of those guys in the West?
100%. Okay. 100%. The thing is, and I think you brought up a good point with the Jazz too, and Quinn Snyder, their coach, has said this, where every possession, they do not know who's going to score. They have so many options of who to go to and who's going to be open. Just the way the system is there are plenty of guys, all five of them have the possibility of scoring. So statistics-wise, it is hard to put Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert up against some of these guys. But I think the fact that they have led the Jazz to this good of a winning streak, to the top of the West, to how dominant they have looked the first half of the season, you have to put one or two of those guys on the All-Star team. You have to.
Yeah, I think it'll be Donovan Mitchell. I'm not sure if it'll be Rudy Gobert, but I know for sure it'll be Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell definitely deserves to be an All-Star. We'll see what happens with Rudy Gobert. We'll see how the coaches feel. But I'll definitely give a vote to Donovan Mitchell if I was a coach in the NBA for the reserve spots, for sure.
100%. All right, more stuff NBA Twitter talking about. Dame Lillard calls out the Timberwolves for not hiring Vanderpool.
Did you see that? Did you see that live last night?
I didn't see it live. What was it like seeing that live?
So what happened was, and it's the only reason why I even, you know, brought this up, because my whole thing too, Ben, was like the whole situation with the Timberwolves and the firing and the hiring and how it trans. I was so confused, and I was on the clock, so I'm confused. I don't really know what's going on. It's like, okay, so he got fired, but it's like, was there an interview or like what happened? It just happened. It overturned so quickly, man. Like they hired Chris Finch, the assistant coach from the Raptors, to be the new head coach for the Timberwolves. But that happens like right after, you know, Ryan Sanders gets fired. Have we ever seen a coach get hired and fired that fast? Or two coaches, like, have we ever seen that transpire that way? I feel like I've never seen that.
No, it was really quick. The turnaround was really, really quick. They clearly had the guy that they wanted in mind before that game even happened. They were probably just waiting for another loss to happen so they could look better firing Saunders.
And obviously, you know, John Saunders, that's Flip Saunders' son, the late great Flip Saunders, rest in peace to Flip. You know, everybody loved Flip in the Minnesota organization. So to see his son get fired, that was tough. I thought it was tough. Granted, they are 7-24, the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they haven't been good for quite some time. But in Damian Lillard's case, and what he preached and what he talked about in regards to why they should have hired Vanderpool, everything makes sense. He was on that staff with the CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, who have emerged as one of the best backcourts in the NBA. And he's been around the league for quite some time. And he's had this career in terms of coaching and being a pro player and playing exceptionally well during his time at St. Bonaventure. And so when you have all this take place, it's like you got to do so much to be a black coach in the NBA. It's not even funny. And so I think that's what Damian Lillard was really alluding to. Is like, why hasn't this man haven't had his opportunity yet after so long? He's been with countless organizations, the Blazers, you know, over to the Minnesota Timberwolves now and various other organizations. It's like, where is he going to get his flowers and his opportunity to be a head coach in the NBA?
Yeah, someone like that should definitely get some consideration for a head coaching spot. It's
and he's on the he's on the team too, right? So Vanderpool, he's on their roster. He's on their coaching roster too, their coaching staff with the Minnesota Timberwolves. So that, I have to clarify that too. That's why that was so important, and that's why Lillard made such an emphasis on that too as well.
Yeah, you would hope at the very minimum that they interviewed him, talked to him, but again, you said, I mean, it was such a quick turnaround. They maybe didn't even interview him at all because they knew who they wanted and they fired him and they hired the guy that they wanted right away. They didn't even say, you know what, we're going to interview Vanderpool, see what he has to say, maybe consider him. The way that they went about it makes it seem like they probably did not do that. All right. We have to talk about Brad Stevens again, apparently. Giving up a 24-point lead to the New Orleans Pelicans, losing the game. And again, Zach, I am all for people criticizing the Celtics. They are a team that I believe should be so much better than they are right now. They have the talent. They have a guy who is so close, Zach, to being a superstar in Jason Tatum. He's about as close as anybody right now to being that next superstar type of player. He's not there yet by any means, but he's knocking on the door, and the team just is so inconsistent. And as we saw, they can lose focus really easily. They can go on stretches where they just can't score or play defense at the same exact time. And that's how they lose to the New Orleans Pelicans after winning by 24 in the same game. So people really are starting to talk about Brad Stevens and his coaching position with the Celtics.
Hey, and that's why I always got to bring it to the light. And I gotta,
you have to.
I have to. It's only right that I do it. You know it's only right that I do it.
And it seems to me at some point Brad Stevens and the Indiana Hoosiers are destined to be married. So if the Celtics do end up getting rid of him at the end of the season, I think it's a win-win because I get the Hoosiers probably go out and they hire him after firing Archie Miller. So I'm fine. I'm good. I'm sitting easy. Let's see. One more last thing for NBA Twitter. James Harden giving away 3,000 meals to Houstonians. And, Zach, I know we love to rag on James Harden on this podcast, so I think it is only fair that we give him his props for stepping up during a tough time in Texas with the winter storms and everything.
He had his own restaurant, too. I didn't know that. He was his own restaurant. I found that out today.
Yeah, he talked about how he was on calls this whole past week trying to figure out ways to help out Houstonians and Texans with blackouts and trouble with piping and everything that's been going on, no electricity, everything like that. He's been trying to figure it out. He gave out 3,000 meals for free to Houstonians as well. So again, you got to give him props when he deserves it. All right. Overreaction time, Zach. Is this overreaction?
Arnold. Zach LaVine. First of all, Zach, got to shout out to Zach LaVine because he got a great name. His name is Zach. That's just a great name. I just have to say that. You know, Zach LaVine, you have a dope first name. And your father's dope, too. I saw some videos with you and your father working out. I thought that was dope. Now, should Zach LaVine be up for most improved player of the year? Ben.
I do want to start this by officially apologizing to Zach LaVine.
Because
I know I have said not glowing reviews about him on this very podcast. I have complained about Zach LaVine, and this was a long time ago, aka, you know, about a year ago. I was not his biggest of fans. I didn't really think he brought enough to the Bulls to push them over the hump, and he has completely made me do a 180 in the past season. Since the start of the year in December, he has shown, first of all, I respect his loyalty to the Bulls, too. He is someone who could easily is good enough to start complaining about the Bulls and the direction that they were going with Jim Boylan and everything that was going on and the mess that that team was a year ago and how good he showed he could be. He could have easily said, trade me, get rid of me. I want to get out of the city. I don't want to be a Bull anymore. And he did not do that. He stuck with the team. He didn't even say anything bad about Jim Boylan at all, who he clearly disliked as a head coach.
He did. You could see it in his demeanor. You could see it in his face throughout games, especially close, tight games, too, or just games that the Bulls would blow at the end because they would be in situations where they would have a lead under Jim Boland, and they would blow the lead, and he would have this frustration in post-game interviews in his face. And you could read Zach LaVine, but you knew he couldn't say the things he probably really truly wanted to say. But Zach LaVine is definitely can win most improved player of the year. He can also win. He can also become an all-star. I think this is the year he will become an all-star.
I agree.
He's played exceptionally well. The Bulls are right there in the hunt for that play-in game. I think they can actually become an eighth seed if they just can keep playing well and the young guys just continue to grow in terms of Project Pat and him continuing to emerge as one of the young rookies in the NBA. I think Pat is also going to be up for all rookie first team, too. I think he definitely deserves that. But most improved player for Zach LaVine this year? I mean, who else can you really give it to? I mean, our main man's MPJ, he got off to a slow start. Then he had COVID, you know what I'm saying? Michael Porter Jr. So it was tough. We didn't really have him, you know, to really emerge and really become that player we thought he would be. But Zach LaVine is playing lights out. I think if they make a playoff push to Chicago Bulls, you got to give Zach LaVine most improved player of the year.
Yeah, I think LaVine being player of the year makes way too much sense at this point. Excuse me. I think LaVine being the most improved player of the year makes a lot of sense at this point. And again, apologies to him. He has done everything in his power to make himself better. He's become, as we talked to Stephen, we talked to Stephen Ngo the other day, last week, about his defense and how good of a defender he has become. See, he's not a great defender. Nope. I don't think he'll ever be a great defender, but he has at least improved his defense over the past season, and he's just become a really good scorer, a good player. He's learned to facilitate when sometimes he doesn't need to score. He's facilitating to his teammates. He has just become, at 25 years old now, a much more rounded player, and that is a big reason why the Bulls are winning these games. And he was struggling early on in the season to close out games for the Bulls. He missed three or four shots down the stretch of these games, buzzer beaters, in fact, where he would miss and the Bulls would lose. And now he has hit a couple of huge clutch shots over the past month and a half, and he's really starting to come into his own. And I think at this point, Zach, at 25, we are starting to see Zach LaVine finally kind of move into his prime, where he is just this huge scorer, and he can score in bunches, and it's almost impossible for the defense to stop him when he wants to get to the bucket. So it is great to see him do this. It is great to see him improve. He's hopefully rewarded with an all-star team berth this season. And I think he really should be the number one guy to get this most improved player of the award this season.
Now, speaking of buckets and getting a lot of buckets, let's talk stat of the week. 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right, what's our stat of the week this week, Zach?
Stat of the week, Ben, this week is 52 times. And that's because over this past week, we didn't just see one 50-point game, but we saw two 50-point games this past week. One came from big man, big dog, Joel Embiid, dropping 50 points. And then the other guy was I won't say a little fella, but a guard holding it down. And that's Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray scored 50 points. But I want to tell you why Jamal Murray's 50 points may have been more impressive than Joel Embiid's. Number one, Joel Embiid, a center. So, like, you know, in this day and age with the small ball, at some point, you better score a high 40, get 50, because Jokic did it. Okay, so
you gotta match it.
You gotta match it, especially with that MVP talk. You gotta match whatever Jokic's doing over there out in the West. But for Jamal Murray to come out and drop 50 points, but what was so key with Jamal Murray's 50, he had no free throws, 0-0. When I saw that at the end of the game with the box score, because I'm like, I wasn't watching that game, but to really see at the end of the game, he only missed 4 shots, 21 for 25, 8 threes. No free throws. I'm going to say it again. No free throws. One more time. No free throws. 50 points, no free throws. That's like dropping 40 with no threes. How do you drop 40 with no threes? That's all just two-point baskets. That's amazing, Ben. And so I got to give credit to when credit's due. He went out there and balled out Jamal Murray with 50 points, 21 to 25 from the field, 8 threes, and 0-for-0 free throws line. From the free throw line. That's amazing.
And people
have
been waiting. It really is. And people have been waiting for the type of Jamal Murray that we saw in the bubble last season, at the end of the bubble, where he was bringing the Nuggets back down 3-1 in two consecutive series. People are waiting to see that Jamal. You know, the game seven, two game seven, Jamal Murray's. Game six, Jamal Murray's. And people were waiting for that to just become the norm for him this season. And maybe that was a little too much put on him. And it's hard to be that good that consistently. But to start the season, it was a little bit rough. Past, you know, January was a bit rough. But he's really finally now starting to feel himself a bit more. And the Nuggets are playing really well. And they've had some tough losses, as the Nuggets will, because there are just some nights where they look like they would rather be anywhere else than playing a basketball game. And that's just what the Nuggets are, and that's just how they play. And that's the team that they under Malone. But when he's on, Zach, he is that 1-2 punch of Murray and Jokic is
when they click, it's important for that team. When they're both on, they're practically unbeatable. I know, honestly, if you can get Jokic to go out and get you 24, 25 a game, and then Jamal Murray is going to go out there and match that on top of the collective effort you're going to get from the rest of the roster, the Denver Nuggets are a team that honestly can't be beat when they both play at a high level. Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, without question.
Yeah, and that pick and roll is disgusting. I don't know how you guard a pick and roll with Jamal Murray and Jokic, but Murray finally really starting to score in bunches. Now, I think the only problem is, right, he had 30 against Atlanta, 50 against Cleveland. He had 35 against Washington. Now, that's three games in a row. Out of those three, the Nuggets are 1-2.
Yikes.
So that's an issue. That's an issue where you have Murray scoring in high bunches, but the team is losing. And I know they've been hit with injuries, and the Nuggets will forever be the injury team with how they have been in the past three or four years. So
them or Portland? I don't know. Them, yeah, or the Blazers?
Portland, no. Portland for sure is the number one injury team in the history of the NBA. What are you talking about, tough injuries? But the Nuggets in the past few years have certainly had their own fair bad stretch of injuries. So they need to figure out how to win with Jamal Murray playing well. They just do, because they were winning. They were winning a ton. And Jamal Murray, you know, he scored 5 points in a game against OKC, and Denver won by 18. So they can figure out how to win when he's not playing well. But for some reason, he's scoring a lot. They've won one out of their last four, and Jamal Murray has scored no fewer than 25 points in those four games. So that's something that needs to be addressed, I think, for the Nuggets.
With that 50-point from Joel, with the 17 rebounds and the 5-6 assists, what an amazing performance. And I want to add this too before we go. This is the first 50-point game we've seen from someone in a Philadelphia 76ers uniform in over 16 years. And you know who that last player was in a Philadelphia 76ers uniform to go out there and drop 50, Ben? Tell me who that player was.
What was it, Allen Iverson?
Come on, baby. The one and only to answer. Number three. AI to answer. So he was the last one to go out there and drop 50 in 2005. So it's been about 16 years or so since we've seen a 50-point performance from a 76er. So I got to commend Joel Embiid for going out there and dominating the way that he did in his performance.
I think that'll do it.
That's going to conclude this edition of Points in the Paint podcast. I want to thank you for listening. As always, remember to subscribe, rate us, review us, leave comments wherever you get your podcast, you know, Apple, Spotify, wherever. We're everywhere. Wherever you get your podcast, make sure you like the new Facebook page on Facebook, Points in the Paint Podcast. Follow us on Twitter as well, at Points Paint. Follow myself, Zach Badgerhouse, and Ben Wittenstein on Twitter. Make sure for all your NBA news and breaking coverage around the NBA, follow Shams on Twitter. Make sure you follow Stadium as well. Listen to Trash and Treasure with Amina and Felder. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review them as well. They have exclusive content and great interviews every week. And you'll hear from us, Zach B. and Ben Wittenstein, next week.